Let's talk about Riverside.fm, the leading podcast and video creation platform that's changing the game on how creators record content. Riverside.fm allows you to record studio quality audio and up to 4K video on their platform. Now you can interview a guest 1,000 miles away and it'll sound like you're sitting in the same room. It's as easy to use as Zoom, but gives much higher quality audio and video recordings. Did we mention that they have a mobile app? This allows guests to connect directly from their phone and record content from anywhere. After your content is finished, you can easily grab clips to share them across your social media channels. So if you're looking for a hero platform for all your recording needs, from podcasts to webinars to other video content, you should be using Riverside FM. Sign up today so you can focus on your content and leave the quality to Riverside FM. Use promo code SHIPIT and receive a 30% discount on your first 3 months of your subscription. That's promo code SHIPIT to receive a 30% discount on the first 3 months of your subscription. Back to the show.
Welcome back to episode number 13 of the City That Never Sleeps podcast. We're back with a very special guest today. We welcome on the podcast NBA writer and reporter covering the Brooklyn Nets for Nets Daily, Chris Mulholland. Chris, how are you today?
Doing good, guys. How about yourself?
Doing well. We're doing well. We're excited to have you on. Obviously, we're recording this the night before the beginning of the NBA season, and all the listeners can listen the day of the first Nets game against the Bucks. So I think it's perfect timing to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing good. Yeah, like you said, obviously the season starts tomorrow. Excited for that. And, you know, onwards to 82 games until June, you know? So ready for it and, yeah, just ready.
So we kind of like to go backwards before we go forwards. Or yep. we like to start in the, like, backwards and then kind of go up to present day. Mm-hmm. Just kind of ask you how you got into the industry. So my first question for you is really, when did you realize that you wanted to be a sports journalist?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, that because when I went to college, right, I graduated in 2016 from Emerson High School, and it's in Northern Jersey, right? So graduated there. I went to state school. So I went to Montclair State. So a lot of North Jersey guys know of that school. And when I went in as a business major. I knew I always wanted to do something in sports, but I didn't know exactly which avenue I wanted to take, right? So I went for business first. And obviously, as you guys know, when you're a freshman and sophomore in college, you have a lot of gen eds to fill. You have a lot of, like, you know, other courses that you have to fill for the credit. So I was doing that in the beginning, a mixture of my business as well. And I was in a microeconomics class, and I was sitting there, and like, I got that kind of like that kind of hint where mostly everyone gets it once in a while. It's like, do you really want to be doing this for the rest of your life type of thing? So I was like, I went back, thought about it. And I've always been a big sports guy my whole entire life. Like I'm literally any sport you name of, I've watched it, know the business kind of inside and out. Business side of it, it's always attracted me as well. I'm not kind of like the average sports fan that kind of just attracts the players of the actual play. I've always been interested in the business behind the scenes, endorsements, all those type of things as well. So when I was my sophomore year, I decided, I was looking around, I was thinking, okay, you know, maybe I should go into communications. Like, that's a good avenue. I went to communications, so finalized on sports media and journalism. So it's a television digital media concentration. So I did my undergrad with that, and I also had a little minor in sociology as well. And in college, I started writing. So how I really kind of got into this was, obviously, you guys know, anyone that really knows that's young, when you start out, like, you don't really have a platform to really go to. It's one of those things you really have to grind, pay your dues type of – this is that type of field. So in the very beginning when I started, I would upload Microsoft Word documents and Google documents. I would just watch the Nets games, Knicks games, Giants games, really whatever, and just put it on my Twitter at that time, where I had maybe like 10, 15, 50 followers, whatever the case is, kind of whoever reads it, right? And as I went on and progressed and everything, a company called Lead Sports picked me up, Lead Sports New York. I wrote for them for roughly, I would say, 10 months or so, and then I hopped the fan-sided. That's where I was more team-concentrated, so I covered the Nets. No credentials or anything, kind of just over the TV, writing up games, recaps and everything like that. And then with Fansided, I got invited to an event, the NBA 2K event, which was a launch event in 2019 for that video game. So at that game, I interviewed D'Angelo Russell, got a good story because I looked around in the beginning, what was his name, like what news was going around him at the time, those type of things. So I wanted to make sure the story I wrote for that interview was very different than what other people wrote. So my name sticks out there, right? Especially on a good note. did that, did obviously all the work in the beginning, and then me and Nets Daily got a deal, and we reunited, and yeah, I've been there since 2018, so been a very fun time and very grateful for everything.
So obviously with the season starting tomorrow with the Nets, I mean, there's not much controversy going on besides obviously the whole Kyrie Irving situation. Yeah. What do you think of the situation? What do you make of it? Obviously, mm-hmm. there's lots of different people, different opinions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And to follow that up, do you think the Nets can win without Kyrie Irving or without him in their home games or whatever the circumstances may be?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, because I guess overall my thoughts on the Kyrie Irving situation is obviously everyone, like anyone knows, everyone's got their own choice to do what they want, right? And with the vaccine, what a lot of, especially when you talk about it in a basketball terms, which is what the media do, we'd like to talk things in a basketball perspective. He needs the vaccine in order to play. It's a New York City mandate. It's like San Francisco, and it's soon to be Los Angeles. It could be active now. I didn't check. But in those cities, obviously, you have to have at least one shot in order to enter indoor arenas or facilities. So that eliminates him out of that. And obviously, there was suspicion when he didn't show up to Media Day and all these other events, because obviously that was an indoor arena at the time. He didn't show up. He wasn't there. So obviously, everyone started to speculate from there whether he was vaccinated or not vaccinated. And as time went on, when the Nets made the decision to not have him as a part-time player and have him as a full-time player instead, that's when Sean Marks, when he was the Nets general manager, when he was talking to us, he mostly said that, hey, we're not going to have him here as a part-time player. We only want him here as a full-time thing, which makes sense because you don't want him to be hovering around as a distraction, because if you can only have him for less than 42 games or 41 games, then, you know, that also implies for postseason, whatever the case is. So it mostly says, hey, you got to become a full-time participant. Because at the end of the day, if you have a player that's even as special as Kyrie Irving, a generational talent as he is, if you have someone like him as a part-time player on your team, one of the main vocal voices as a leader, you know, the Nets took the right decision, obviously, of just holding him out. And do they have enough to win it all? I would say, you know, out of the East they do, but out of the whole NBA, I don't think so. Because I think when you match up against the Lakers in the finals, which we were all kind of predicting, we all kind of think that's how it's going to pan out, that I think that Kyrie Irving would be a valuable part in that, because it's just the gravity pulls of 50, 40, 90, the points, how obviously he contributes a very big amount to the Nets offense as just a scorer outside of being a facilitator, where Harden is. He could also pass the ball as well. So, you know, that's kind of just a simple answer, I guess you could say. But, like, overall, you know, it's just going to be interesting to see how this whole thing turns out heading into the season, which is tomorrow.
And you mentioned LA, obviously, the Lakers being like the finalists between them and the Nets. I mean, kind of like a hypothetical type of thing, but you mentioned how the vaccine mandate might also go to LA. So he wouldn't be able to play in any of those games if it was to go to the NBA finals,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. That's the thing. Cause like and it's going to happen across multiple cities, I can imagine. You know, obviously, no one knows what's going to happen with COVID, especially the different variants. How mostly the thing's going to progress into the fall and the winter, right? So no one really knows, but I can imagine a lot of cities are going to follow New York City and San Francisco, like LA did recently with their mandates.
I have a question about your Twitter profile pic, because you're mentioning like events you went to and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You got the interview with Blake Griffin there.
I did.
Twitter profile pic. How did that happen?
So what was it? I'd say like a month ago, something like that. So a Nets assistant named Adam Harrington. So he hosted a thing for his late sister, but kind of like a foundation, just kind of spread her name. It's about cancer and everything like that as well. So it was a beautiful event, had an auction there where all the proceeds go to research. And on top of that, even just basketball courts in the area. So in West Orange and Brooklyn, kind of revamping the courts over there. And obviously with the Nets, it's a very tight-knit family, what they got, especially with the culture aspect. So a lot of players rolled through. You had Blake Griffin, Joe Harris, Spencer Dinwiddie, to name a few. Steve Nash was there with his wife, and just a couple other guys from other sports as well. Like I forget the guy's lacrosse guy's name. I'm not too big in lacrosse, but they were all showed out. It was a beautiful event, and obviously when I went there, I just wanted to get that story of just, hey, talk about the event, talk about the support, that Nets family, that type of thing. So got that done, interviewed Blake for like, pulled him aside for like 2 or 3 minutes, asked him a couple questions, then interviewed him. That was it. So pretty good story overall.
And in the off season, besides the Kyrie Irving situation, kind of the news over the summer league, Cam Thomas. What do you think his role could be if, say, Kyrie Irving's not playing on this team?
Well, every person in the backups in the backcourt is going to get a boost in their roles if Kyrie Irving's not going to play, right? So with Cam, if Kyrie Irving was healthy, I don't think Cam's going to play too much minutes. Nash isn't that type of head coach. You kind of get that vibe that he's not going to give the rookies a lot of minutes, which makes a lot of sense, especially if you're a title contending team. You know, there's only so many spots to come around, especially with this Nets team, what they did in the depth with Patty Mills, Javon Carter, who I think was a great pickup. And obviously you could shoot the ball, play stellar defense, really good addition overall. And then obviously Patty's just a culture fit. Big into culture. The culture makes him tick, but no, there's no place like Brooklyn that really has that culture, that within the winning culture, city culture, kind of just an overall perspective of everything, right? So with Cam, it's going to be interesting to see what his role is, because obviously he's out of his own mouth. You know, he said scoring is scoring. He showed that in college, showed in the summer league, showed that a little bit in preseason as well. And, you know, he's like that perfect kind of rookie to be on the Nets, right? Because obviously you have three of the best bucket getters in the NBA right now on the team, with Kyrie obviously out, but just how you add him in, Kyrie, James, KD, right? So you have all those three to mentor and have him be a mentor to. So he's going to he's gonna definitely learn. He's definitely going to have a lot of opportunities. And at the end of the day, he's only a rookie still. I know the NBA is one of those biggest sports where time's not really on a rookie side. They got to perform right away to really show their value, or at least the first 2 or 3 years. Both can be sitting in a comfortable situation. And I think he'll definitely get minutes as the season goes on. But I would say if you want to ballpark it, especially with how Irving's situation is rolling out right now, I would say like maybe 12 to 15 minutes off the bench, maybe 9-12. Nothing major at all, but some games you might not even see him playing. So he's one of those misty players you got to see, watch out for. But once the Nets drafted him, it was clear as day that if he doesn't develop now or he doesn't get minutes now, this is kind of a long-term plan. So it's one of those rookies that have really big upside and at the same time can really perform.
And with Kyrie Irving, obviously, there's the trade talks. I know people have been saying, oh, you can just trade him now. But if you're looking at it, what team is going to want him? Because, hey, in 2 months, every team, every city in the NBA might have the same, you know, regulations that New York, that LA, like that San Francisco has, right? So I don't think any team wants to take that risk. So, you know, obviously there's been talks about the Ben Simmons swap. I'm not sure if that's a great idea anyway, but, you know, what do you think about that? I don't think he has any value. Do you?
No, he doesn't have any value. That's the thing, right? Because that's the major point of any trade pros out there, right? Because you have a guy that it depends. Obviously, like if he gets vaccinated, then this whole thing's over, right? He's going to be on the Nets. Obviously, the extension, we'll see what happens there. Because his extension doesn't have a deadline. Like today, James Harden has to be extended by 11:59 at night at Eastern time in order for it to be offered now. If he doesn't accept an extension now, he's got to wait till the offseason, which he makes a lot more money. He get $205 million, which is an NBA record, which would be an NBA record if he signs with the Nets as an extension. But with Kyrie, you know, he doesn't have any trade value. That's the thing where it comes down to, right? Because like with Kyrie, obviously we all know he could do on the court, generational talent, elite bucket getter, very skilled, one of the most skilled in the game, definitely one of the best in his position. But at the end of the day, you know, that's the type of baggage that a team is going to know when you acquire a player like this. You know, there's been history here of absences, whether it's personal absences, injuries. You know, he doesn't play a lot of games. You know, he just doesn't play a lot of games for different various reasons that, you know, those type of things. But, you know, at this time, if I was the Nets, right, I would literally kind of just sit back, wait, see how it develops in the beginning, because he's away from the team, so it's not like a complete distraction, right? Obviously, that we're going to be asking the guys questions throughout the year, what's going on with Kyrie here and there. And Kevin Durant gave a perfect response to that. Hey, it's his own decision, you know, and each decision, no, this is not quoting Kevin Durant here anymore, but like you could say, as you guys know, any decision comes with the consequences. You know, it's a personal choice. For him not getting vaccinated, he just can't play games, you know? So it's going to be one of those things. But to sum up your old question, I don't see the Nets exploring a trade right now because his value is really low.
Transitioning to, I guess, a brighter topic when it comes to the Nets, because I wouldn't say right now that Kyrie Irving is such a bright topic. Kevin Durant on the floor at some moments, especially during the playoffs, looks like, I mean, let's be honest, he's better than anyone on the floor, putting up insane numbers. As Alex likes to tell me, you know, if his shoe size was just a few inches smaller, he could have sent the Nets further places than where they ended up last season. My question for you is just, I mean, pretty hard one, but a pretty simple one to form. And that is Kevin Durant the best player in the world?
Yeah, he's the best player in the world, right? So, because, you know, I've always been one of those guys just like, you know what, I still believe in LeBron. You know, I've always been like a big LeBron guy, not a fan in any way, but just the way he takes care of his body, the way he like just rehabs, plays, maintains consistency, the way he utilizes his game, his size, his physical attributes, everything right there, right? And especially the team that's around him. It's a team that's fit for a guy like him. Then when you look at Kevin Durant, for example, you know, that was the biggest question coming off his Achilles tear. Will he be the same, right? We saw the Knicks didn't offer him a max. Well, it was reported that he didn't offer him a max because of that injury. They didn't know how he was coming back. Because if you look at history, Achilles tears are not – they're the most devastating injury in all of sports. Definitely up there, one or two, I would say. It's definitely one. But everyone wanted to see what he could be like when he came back. And the good thing with KD is that he had had a whole year to recover. So there wasn't really any type of really – not like, oh, you need to be back on the court now, or they rushed him back. They really took their time with him. They made sure the Nets doctor was the one that actually did the surgery on him too when he was in Golden State. So he's surrounded by professionals that knew what they were like, knew his experience and knew his situation very well. And you know, just he hasn't shied at all. No, his production went up across all boards. You see what he is. Obviously, the team around him is built around him. It's built around Kevin Durant with the addition of, obviously, James, like they played in Oklahoma City together in their beginning years. Obviously, with Kyrie. And then you just look at the shooters around. Joe Harris, you got even the depth, like I mentioned before. Really, all the pieces really fit the way Kevin Durant plays this game. So, just overall, I think he's going to have a great year. He's definitely going to be an MVP favorite. My MVP pick is Luka Doncic, though.
And, you know, I want to give a little bit of we got to go back a little bit to a negative here. Obviously, we lost Jeff Green in the in the offseason. We brought in Paul Millsap. Obviously, I think it's a downgrade. I think most people can admit that it's a downgrade. What do you think we're going to miss most from Jeff Green that Paul Millsap probably doesn't have?
Just his overall versatility and durability. Just those two things, right? Because with Jeff Green, he's one of those guys guard one through five. He was really positionless. The Nets love to play positionless basketball. You'll hear that term countless amounts of times throughout the year. And with Jeff Green, you know, he's one of those veterans that really just he molded very well with the Nets because multiple reasons. One, because obviously D'Antoni was the offensive coordinator of the group. They were together in Houston. That's where Jeff Green had the best year before he came to Brooklyn this year. So the continuity was already there. And then when you look at a guy like Paul, Paul's like a veteran. Obviously, he's been on winning teams before. Obviously, if you guys watched the Hawks back in the day, that was a big team that he was on. And he had prominent roles. And obviously, you know, now going forward, he could help out with rebounding. He's a big pick and pop. That's probably what he's going to be used at the most in this Brooklyn offense. He's a pretty solid post defender, I guess you could say. Obviously, the Nets are very weak in that category. But he serves his values there. And overall, you know, he's just a veteran leader. It's someone that knows what it takes to win. Obviously, he didn't win yet, but he knows what it takes to get to that point. And that's what the Nets really built the roster around. They just wanted to make sure that, hey, this is our year. Because the window for the Nets isn't as wide open as a lot of people think. It's only a couple years. So they wanted to really win now. And the acquisition of Paul Millsap, it kind of just checks all the boxes, especially for a guy, a replacement like Jeff Green, even though the production is not going to be identical. But, you know, he's one of those guys that's very respectable around the league, could help with that with rebounding. And he's just a solid post defender that you could use in a pick and pop situation.
Now, I know this isn't your job, but I'm going to have to ask, because the reason we do this podcast is because the city that never sleeps, we're talking about New York City. There's two basketball teams in New York City, and I happen to be a fan of the New York Knicks.
Okay.
That's why we have this, because, you know, we have the bouncing ball between both sides, the Nets and the Knicks. So I have to ask, what do you think of my team this year? How far can they go?
I think the Knicks could get in the 6-5 seed, somewhere in that category, right? I like the offseason moves they did overall. Keeping Derrick Rose was the biggest move, I think, because obviously that's just a great sixth man to have off the bench, a respected guy, someone that's obviously been very well known for the mentors with Emmanuel Quickley and other guys in the locker room last year. Obviously, re-signing Julius Randle was pretty big for them, too. I think he'll have a similar year. And then on top of that, you just look at the other moves, Evan Fournier, bringing in a homegrown talent like Kemba Walker, someone the fans can really relate to. Obviously, you know, Kemba's dipped in his production over recent, with obviously highly due to his health. But I think this is a good opportunity for him to really make some noise, put his name out back on the map as one of the most elite point guards in the league currently. And I guess you just kind of just look around what the Knicks did. You know, they're not one team that is really in a win-now situation. They're trying to build that identity, build that culture around Tibbs, that hard, tough, grit-knit team culture. And I think just overall, you know, they're going to be one of those teams that heading into this year teams are going to go in there and say, okay, this is going to be a tough game. It's not going to be a cakewalk, you know. So I think overall they could probably land the 6-7 seed. I think they'll obviously make the playoffs, but I think they'll be like a low Eastern Conference team.
NBA writer and reporter covering the Brooklyn Nets for Nets Daily. Obviously, the Wingspan podcast as well. You can go check that out on YouTube and go follow Chris. I can't talk.
It's all
Chris.
Good, brother. It's all good.
It's late.
It's a late one.
You can go follow Chris on Twitter at CMahalanSB. And again, yeah, Chris, thank you so much for joining us, man. We really appreciate it.
Of course, guys. Thank you for having me on. If you guys need anything from me moving forward, you know where to reach me.
Welcome to the All 80s Movies Podcast.
I'm Bill.
And I'm Jason. And this is the podcast where we talk about the blockbusters, the flops, and everything in between from one of the freshest decades for movies, the 1980s. So whether you're a brain, a jock, a valley girl, or a Jedi, we've got some 80s classics for you.
Do these movies stand the test of time? Are we discovering something new? Is there an 80s movie we're finally watching for the first time?
Join us each week as we dive into the cinematic nostalgia that inspired and influenced a generation. From the hits to the cult classics, we'll discuss our earliest memories, favorite scenes, fun facts, and our not-so-favorite movie moments, too.
It's the All 80s Movies Podcast, now available on all major streaming platforms. Please subscribe and happy listening.